20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being here. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. I know I say it, it's a throwaway thing. It's kind of repeatable or whatever, but those things do really help the channel a ton. So if you get the opportunity, those things are always fantastic. Of course, tell a friend about it as well. No real news, notes, info to get into today. So we're going to jump right into our main topic. And our main topic for today is going to be things that Brian Gutekunst and the Packers front office might know that we don't know that could alter the Packers' decision-making as they go into this 2025 NFL draft. These things can always sort of feel different from the inside the organization and certainly different from outside the organization than maybe they feel on the inside with certain players that they have seen a lot more of than we have. They have a much better feel and knowledge for somebody like Tyron Hopper. That's just a small sample. We'll go through a lot of these type of players, but take Tyron Hopper, for example. They may feel like Tyron Hopper is a stud in the waiting. We didn't get to see anything. We saw a third round pick that barely got on the field, handful of plays here or there. And we are left in the dark of like, hey, can this be somebody that can actually help the team or not? The Packers have now had him basically in the building for about a year. They've seen him in practices, in the training room. They've seen him in, you know, the film sessions. They probably have a much greater feel for Tyron Hopper than we do. And that goes for everyone, of course, that is on the entirety of the roster. They have a better, more intimate knowledge of all of those players, from scouting them for years to getting to know them inside the building, et cetera. And all of us, whether it's an analyst, a beat writer, a film junkie, a fan, or any of us, right? We are all just trying to play catch up, trying to cram as much in and figure out as much about the Packers that is happening within 1265 and figuring out what they already know. Just a massive game of catch up. And what I want to look at today is what Green Bay might know or might be thinking, or at least some of the players that could theoretically alter the thinking of Brian Gutekunst going into this draft. So we're going to go position by position with this, because I think there's somebody at just about every position, and there's sometimes more than one, that could alter the thinking of how they go about attacking this draft. The quarterback one is a pretty easy one and a decent place to start with. And really the only piece of info that they may know here that we kind of may not know is Malik Willis. And more specifically, have they had any sort of initial conversations with his agent about any sort of contract extension? I would be willing to bet you that Green Bay would like to extend Malik Willis out a couple years. And I would think that any team that would be doing anywhere near remote its due diligence at this point in time will have at least reached out to the agent and said, hey, like, what are we thinking here? Are you pretty dead set on becoming, on Malik becoming a free agent in 2026? Or are you open to getting a contract done and making him, you know, kind of the long-term backup here in Green Bay? And if he's open to that, if there is some discussion on that, and maybe they've worked out some parameters of a deal and are kind of close on it, that could really change things quite a bit. Not a ton. I don't think anyone's expecting a quarterback in the first three, probably even four rounds of this draft, right? But if all of a sudden they have a feeling that they have a real legitimate chance, even if it's not a contract that's close at the moment, if they feel like they have a real legitimate chance to keep Malik Willis into the future, that changes their plans. They really don't need anyone. Like, Sean Clifford then at that point is fine as your, you know, third quarterback. You probably bring in a camp arm to compete with Clifford for that, you know, basically that practice squad spot, and you're probably done, right? You don't really need to do anything other than that. If you feel like Malik Willis is a for sure goner in 2026, or at least it's leaning in that direction, then you might want to say, all right, we don't really have the next guy up who could be the backup in 2026. So if the right quarterback fell our way, we would be interested in taking a look at it and seeing if we could bring that person in now to beat out Sean Clifford as the three. You might need to keep him on the 53 in that situation, probably would. And then hopefully by next year in 2026, you're looking at a quarterback that's ready to be the backup. But again, if that contract is already, you know, being discussed and they feel like there's a real chance there, it probably just takes quarterback almost off the board unless somebody they love just falls to them later in the draft. Running back's another, I think, pretty simple one here. And it probably just comes down to how do they feel about Marshawn Lloyd? And it seems like they feel pretty confident. If for some reason they got some sort of instinct of like, I'm not sure, he didn't really seem like the guy, which didn't seem to be the case. He looked phenomenal in camp. We just heard Matt LaFleur name drop Marshawn Lloyd in a legitimate way of like, hey, he can be a potential game breaker for this offense or a playmaker for this offense. That seems to be the right. Josh Jacobs is going to be the one. Marshawn Lloyd is guaranteed a roster spot. I think we kind of have a good feel for Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Brooks. I don't think there's tremendous upside, although I do really like Emmanuel Wilson. I think there's maybe even a step for him still, but maybe not tremendous like Pro Bowl caliber potential with those two, but certainly 53-man rosterable players. You just don't have a ton of need there. So if there's any one position where there's probably not anything that's going to alter it, it's probably this one. But if for some reason they don't like Marshawn Lloyd as much as we think that they might, or if they feel a lot better about Wilson or Brooks, like those things could change the calculus a little bit. But for the most part, I think this one's pretty cut and dry. Wide receiver, there's a few different things at play here. I think three of them in particular. Number one, Romeo Dobbs concussions. I've seen fans that have thrown out Romeo Dobbs concussions and say, we're really going to go into the season with Christian Watson being hurt. You know, you can't really count on Malik Heath or Bo Melton or, Mecole Hardman. You can't count on any of those guys. And Romeo Dobbs is one hit away from being a career-ending injury. We have no idea of that. It seemed like that first concussion was very serious. It seemed like the second one was, you know, bad, but we don't really have an idea of the severity, whether or not he would have been able to play in a week or a couple weeks. When I asked Brian Gutekunst at the end of season press conference if there were any injuries that were going to linger into 2026, he said no other than Christian Watson. Is this something that, anyone's a, you know, really bad concussion away from potentially ending their career? I get once these start piling, he's had, as far as I know, I think he's had two. And I'm not making light of head injuries at all. I'm not saying that there's not a real possibility that there maybe is some real concern there. There are players who have had, you know, multiple concussions, and it just depends on the severity and the length, and those things can certainly add up over time. We just don't know where Romeo's at. It could be that, you know, hey, one or two more big hits, and it is a real serious problem that could, I mean, look at Tua. I mean, Tua's still playing, you know, and he's had, you know, some of the worst concussion luck in the NFL. So to go as far as to say like Romeo's one hit away from like, you know, a concussion away from like his career, you know, I don't think we can say that with any real level of certainty. However, Green Bay has a much better feel for which version of this it is. Are they legitimately concerned? I'm sure they're in some way concerned about the concussions. No question about it. But are they concerned that like, hey, yeah, one more concussion and this guy could be at least out for the year, if not longer? Or is it like, yeah, he's had two concussions, everything's clear, it's good to go, and there's no long-term concern here? Those things could change the plans here a little bit. The other thing with Romeo is that little off-field incident, or I guess, you know, locker room incident, or not feeling like he was being utilized the right way, you know, suspended for conduct detrimental to the team. Is that done? Is it over with? Have they figured everything out and it's no longer an issue? Or is there still some issue there? That's another thing with Romeo. That's number one. Christian Watson is number two. It seems like we have a feel for like week 12, week 13, week 14, somewhere in that range of when he's going to come back. But it sounds like Christian's ahead in his recovery, or at least doing great. I don't think it's going to be ahead of that time frame, but if they start having a feel of one of two things, either A, that he's going to be back on time and he's going to be like legit good to go, kind of like Rashawn was in those first handful of weeks coming off his ACL, well, that changes your thinking, maybe going into the season of like, all right, we're going to get a, you know, legitimate deep threat and big time player back by the end of the season that can help us in our playoff run. Or if you're feeling like he's either going to be like 75% of himself, or there's some legitimate concern of even if he's going to be able to make it back, you know, in time, or just be the Christian Watson that we know, that changes it as well. So that's another player that I think could really have ramifications on how Green Bay goes about drafting wide receiver, dependent upon how they feel about his injury and his return date and how he returns from that injury. And then the next one is just confidence in Dontayvion Wicks. They've given him a lot of opportunities over the last couple seasons. And in some games, he's repaid that confidence in spades. In other games, a lot of drops, a lot of, you know, just inconsistent play and a lot of, you know, just some play that would be left to be desired, right? Just more playmaking, more consistency. Just haven't seen it out of Wicks. I don't think he's fallen out of any sort of favor because he's continued to get snaps and he's such a good blocker on the outside. Like, he works hard. He's going to continue to get those opportunities. But how they feel about him right now, again, could go a long way in determining what type of, you know, just sort of roster depth and competition they need at that position. If all of these are positive, there's no Dobbs injury concern and there's no off-field concern. You're good with his role and there's no question about him getting disgruntled again. If Watson's returning great and you think he's going to come back at like 98% of himself for that last, you know, what, 5 weeks of the regular season plus playoffs, and if Dontayvion Wicks you feel like is ready for a breakout season, well, that changes how you're going to look at wide receiver. If your confidence is completely shot in Dontayvion Wicks and Christian Watson, you're like, we can't count on anything from an injury standpoint, and Dobbs is maybe a concussion away, well, that also is going to change of like, all right, we need to get some real receivers in here, and we need to really look at spending first, second round picks or whatever it might take to really get some more competition and depth at that spot. Tight end is Luke Musgrave. You already know what I'm going to say. I don't need to say it for those of you. For somebody who's here for the first time, maybe, the idea of Luke Musgrave has been better than Luke Musgrave. This is a player I loved a lot coming out of college. I still have a lot of faith in him. But on the field, take the injuries away. On the field, he has not given exactly Green Bay what I think they were expecting coming out of the draft. He has not exactly been a red zone threat, not exactly been a seam threat, not exactly been a run after the catch threat. He's not a blocking tight end. And then what does that leave you with? I still think there is a really good player in there ready to hopefully burst out sooner rather than later. Sometimes it takes a little bit for tight ends. How Green Bay feels about Musgrave changes the entire feel of that room. If they feel like he's ready to break out in a significant way, well, Kraft and Musgrave are just your guys and probably your guys for the foreseeable future. If they feel like, yeah, we're not seeing it with this guy, plus he's had injuries, that number two tight end spot becomes very interesting and they easily could go out and draft a tight end. Not first round or anything like that, but, you know, day two, day three, early day three, that's a real legitimate option. They don't have a blocking tight end. If they've fallen out of love already with Luke Musgrave, that changes it. And Ben Sims got basically benched by the end of last year and he was given a lot of opportunity to prove himself last year and did not. So this is a position that, depending on how they feel about Musgrave, really changes the dynamic of how aggressive they want to be attacking that position in the draft. Offensive line, I think it's the second year guys. Jacob Monk, Travis Glover, to a lesser extent, Donovan Jennings. What does Green Bay feel they have in those three players? And specifically, I think Monk and Glover. Glover got on the field in that playoff game last year. That did not go well. That is about the toughest situation you could possibly be in. Oh, hey, Travis Glover, we're actually going to immediately insert you into the lineup against the best defensive line in football in a playoff game. And oh, by the way, we're also going to put you at guard when you're a natural tackle. Good luck, buddy. Like, that is a unbelievably tough. Here's Jalen Carter. Here you go. Good luck. Like, that is as difficult and as brutal of an assignment as you could get as a late round rookie really making his debut on the team. I mean, again, playoff scenario, you're immediately thrown into the game and you're putting that guard where you're, again, been primarily a tackle against the best, like, it's Jalen Carter and friends. Like, that's a tough situation. But how they feel about Glover and Monk goes a long way in determining if they feel like Monk can compete for a starting spot, which, by the way, he was actually kind of in that competition at the end of camp last year, getting some snaps with the starters, at right guard. And then Travis Glover, again, was the first guy up off the bench in that playoff game with Morgan being out, notably. But if they feel really good, like, hey, you know, we've got our top six guys, we feel really good about Jacob Monk being the seventh, we feel really good about Travis Glover being the eighth, or switch those two. Kadeem Telford is the ninth. We feel good about that. Donovan Jennings, we think, can actually be the 10th. Your offensive line is kind of done. Like, you don't really need anything more. Anyone that you add is just having to cut one of the guys that we just mentioned. So I think this is one where if they feel really good about the second-year guys, Monk, Glover, and Jennings, your work is done. You really don't need another offensive lineman. They don't feel that way. Well, get some competition, and probably sooner rather than later. Defensive end, LVN is an obvious one. Do they feel like he's legitimately ready for a breakout and can be a legitimate, you know, first round pick, starting caliber, impact player? Then the other two, Kingsley Nigbari, I've said this. I think he had an extremely disappointing season last year. Where do they view him? Like, if he's your number four, you probably feel fine. The big one, though, maybe not the big one. The big one's LVN, but an interesting one is really Brenton Cox. I looked this up, and it's a very extremely stupidly small sample size, okay? Let's not get too carried away with this. In his last four games of the season last year, Brenton Cox got on the field for 62 pass rush snaps. 62 in his last four games, about 15 pass rush snaps per game. In those 62 pass rush snaps, he had a pressure on 13 of them. That is a 21% clip. To give you an idea of that, TJ Watt was at 9.5% last year. He's one of the best edge rushers in football. Your NFL sack leader, and who everyone wants on the team, Trey Hendrickson, was at 16.1%. Brenton Cox was a solid 5% ahead of that and about 12% ahead of TJ Watt, or 11.5%. Now, I am not comparing Brenton Cox to Trey Hendrickson or TJ Watt or any other premier pass rusher. I am not saying that that is not a ridiculously small sample size. I am not insinuating that he can take that over 62 pass rush snaps and now give him 500 pass rush snaps and he's going to stay at that 21%, right? That would be absurd. By the way, that would be, what, 100? That would be over 100 pressures. I'm going to be willing to make a bet with you right now that Brenton Cox does not have 100 pressures in 2025, even if you give him that many snaps. I'm going to go out on a limb. But he did have very good productivity. He was fairly impressive. He held up against the run. If you feel like you've got a legitimate edge guy in Brenton Cox, you feel like LVN can be a legitimate starter and take that jump next year, and maybe Enigbari has a bounce back year, again, it's going to change your appetite for how you feel you need to maybe spend a first round pick or so on a edge rusher. And I'll say it again, on the flip side, if they're like, yeah, Brenton Cox is an undrafted guy, we're not going to put a ton of stock into it. Had a couple nice reps last year, but let's not get carried away. And Igbari's coming off a bad season, and we've seen no sign from LVN that he's ready to break out. Guess what? Hello, maybe first-round pick defensive end. Changes things quite a bit. And again, these are things that Green Bay has a better pulse on. I don't care how much tape you've watched. I don't care how many highlights you've seen. I don't care what your gut tells you about these players. They have a more intimate knowledge of all these guys and where their trends are heading. And that's not to say that the Packers are infallible or that they don't get this stuff wrong or that they don't, you know, misplace their trust from time to time. All those things happen. These are human relationships. There is egos involved. They have spent high draft picks on some of these guys. They're going to give them opportunities to succeed. Sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees. I get all of those things, but they have probably a better pulse on it than anyone outside the organization could. And again, how they feel about it is going to change their thinking quite a bit. Defensive tackle, what does Kenny Clark look like in year two of Jeff Hafley's defense? Can it be better than what it was and probably his worst, not probably his worst season in his career a season ago? How about Devontae Wyatt? Are you planning on picking up his fifth year option? Is he going to be a Packer in the future? Or are you theoretically thinking of maybe just letting him walk in free agency? That certainly changes some things. If you don't have Devontae Wyatt and Kenny Clark's probably gone next year, like defensive tackle becomes a much bigger need. And then what about Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks? You already lost TJ Slayton. To me, like Carl Brooks is good enough to be a fourth, fifth defensive tackle. Plus he can play a little bit on the edge. There's value there. I don't know that he ever is going to work his way into like a legitimate, really good starter or anything like that, but he's more than capable of being a rotational piece on any defense in the NFL. Colby Wooden, I have a lot more questions on, even though he's a fourth round pick. I think this is a year where Colby Wooden's going to have to legitimately earn his spot. And all of those things, again, go into that formula of what they need to do at defensive tackle. To me, they probably are a little bit cautiously optimistic about Kenny Clark, who knows where that contract's at with Wyatt, and Wooden and Brooks are going to really need to prove themselves. That's the case. You probably need to attack that position pretty aggressively, not just for 2025, but for 2026 and beyond as well. Linebacker, we kind of spoiled earlier, Tyron Hopper. This has probably been, again, probably about a cut and dry one. I'll say Quay Walker, though, too, with that fifth-year option, same thing. My guess is they feel like Quay is going to be a Packer for a while yet. And if that's the case, Quay, Edgerrin Cooper aren't going anywhere. You have Tyron Hopper for the next few seasons. Isaiah McDuffie, you just re-signed. There's less at stake here. There's less question marks here. But if they feel great about Tyron Hopper, it's a position that you really probably don't need to address almost at all, other than late round picks and just some depth for the position. And if they do not feel good about him, like it was a bust of a pick or whatever, then there's still maybe some appetite for maybe an early day three or even a late day two selection if the right player presented themselves. Corner, there's a lot going on here. Jaire Alexander, I don't even need to talk about it. You know the situation. They're going to know it better than we do if he's going to be back, if he's going to be gone, if it's a foregone conclusion, if there's any reconcile possibility. All those things are in the ether, and only they know of where that stands. Javon Bullard, do they feel like his long-term home, is in nickel? If they view him as like more of a safety and didn't like how the nickel situation went, that changes the corner room. If they feel like that's his spot, Javon's going to be our nickel, that changes the corner room. So that's an interesting one. And then the other two are Kalen King and Kamal Haddon, a 6th and 7th round pick from a season ago. Kamal Haddon was not a Packers 6th round pick, but they were able to claim him off waivers. He was a 6th round pick last year. And then Kalen King was their own 7th round pick. Both of them still on the roster, reserve futures deals. And both of them got called up a couple different times this past year, primarily special teams. If they feel like Kamal Haddon and Kalen King can be Robert Rochelle and Corey Ballantyne and be like the 5th and 6th corners on the team, all right, you're good. You're probably looking at Nixon and Hobbs as your starters. You've got Bullard in the slot. You've got Ballantyne. Then you've got Haddon and King. It doesn't feel like enough to me. I think you probably still need one more guy, even if you have some faith there. But again, how they feel about some of those younger players is going to go a long way in determining how aggressive they need to be in this draft at that cornerback spot. And then last but not least is Ketan Oladapo, not necessarily at safety, but we have seen them take some of these younger safeties and move them into hybrid linebacker roles. I don't know that they need it with Quay and Cooper, but let's just say that either one of those two goes down and you're in obvious passing downs. I don't love McDuffie in obvious passing downs. I don't know that we can trust Tyron Hopper yet. It's certainly not going to be Christian Welch. I would lean towards saying, hey, let's get Ketan in the box. Let's put Cooper and Ketan together. Let's put Quay and Ketan together in that situation. And that's another one where it could affect your thinking at linebacker. And just if you have another piece there that can be kind of a unique, you know, pass only sort of linebacker. But I'm intrigued. He has the size. I think he can do it. And just what I saw in the game that he got on the field, that Bears game at the end of the year, and maybe there's one before that as well. But he looked good. He looked really good. And somebody that would be intrigued at maybe getting on the field a little bit more. Maybe there's an opportunity there in some obvious passing downs, especially if there were an injury to Cooper or Quay throughout the course of the season. So all of them, all these positions, all these players, Malik Willis, the running backs like Marshawn Lloyd, Dobbs, Watson, Wicks, Musgrave, Monk, Glover, Jennings, LVN, Cox, Enagbare, Clark, Wyatt, Wooden, Brooks, Hopper, Alexander, Bullard, King, Haddon, Oladapo. I'm sure there's probably a couple other ones as well, but all of those players and how Green Bay feels internally about them completely changes the dynamics of some of those position groups and whether or not you need to be more aggressive in the draft or less aggressive. Just remember, if you feel like, oh, Green Bay didn't do this at a specific spot, maybe it's because they feel one of these positions is actually filled already and we just don't see it from the outside because, again, we're not privy to all the information that Green Bay has inside. Say one last time, that doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean we're wrong, but they have a little bit more info than we do and certainly get a little bit more time, a lot more time with these players to have a better feel and a better pulse for where their careers are headed and what trajectory they might be on. Excuse me. That's all I got. Nothing more. There's no major point here, right? There's nothing to say like, well, I'm not trying to lead you in any direction. I'm not trying to say, well, they don't need to get a wide receiver. They don't need to get a defensive end. We are very clear, I think, all the way around on they could use a playmaker, a deep threat at wide receiver. They could use some more depth along the offensive line, competition at corner, and certainly pass rush and defensive tackle, both in the short and long term. We know the needs, the wants, the desires. I don't think any of those are changing, but just know that there are some things that are probably going on at 1265 that they think that we don't know. And some of those things could be included in what we talked about today. That's going to do it for me. Thank you so much for joining me. You're the absolute best. I'll talk to you guys very soon. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Ataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, Carla Delgado, and Willie Winkle Stinkle. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.